Fight!
Welcome everyone to New Game Plus, a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name is Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And this is episode 35, where we are going to talk extensively about the game Lode Runner. But before we do that, we want to introduce you to someone special today. We want to introduce you to a friend of ours, Ken Gagne.
Hey, everybody. Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Ken, would you just take a moment, introduce yourself, kind of let our viewers know what you're all about and how we connected with you?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I am, of course, a fan of New Game Plus. I love the show that you guys do.
Well, thank you.
I first discovered it when you did the Prince of Persia episode, which was way back episode number 7 this past November, one of your first episodes, and have been a joyful listener ever since. The Contra episode, Civilization. I somehow missed your Dragon Warrior episode. I need to go back and listen to that, because I rented that game for like 3 weeks straight when I was a kid.
That's Kenny's story, too.
Yeah, that's a great game. It's one... No, I owned it. Like, I love that game.
Yeah.
But the reason I was a fan of the Prince of Persia podcast, the reason that came up on my episode, on my radar, is because I have been a gamer since the 70s with the Atari 2600 and the Apple II, and certainly the Atari 2600 led way to the 5200, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Nintendo 64, GameCube, Wii, Wii U. But the Apple II, the computer that I had back then, never really got replaced. I still have my Apple II, the same one I had as a kid, and I'm still playing games on it, and I'm part of this much larger retro computing enthusiast community that celebrates the Apple II. We have an annual Apple II convention that we go to in Kansas City every July.
Yes.
There, I used to co-host a monthly Apple II podcast that continues to this day called Open Apple. I highly recommend it. And I am the editor-in-chief of the last remaining print publication dedicated to the Apple II, that being Juiced.gs, currently in its 21st year of publication.
I love that.
We could just sit here and listen to you all day talk about this retro gaming. So you said that you are still playing today on the same Apple II that you grew up playing?
Yeah, we had an Apple IIe when I was like around 1983, 1984, and then we got a 2GS in 1988, and I still have that 2GS. It's still hooked up, and it still works just great.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Impressive. Now, a lot of developers and franchises got their start here, right? Like on Apple II and some of these other retro gaming systems back in the day?
Yeah, a lot of developers, John Romero, for example, creator of Doom and Wolfenstein 3D, he actually was the keynote speaker at Kansas Fest, which is the Apple II conference a few years ago. Jordan Mechner, who created Prince of Persia, which you all played on episode number 7.
Yeah.
And Prince of Persia, of course, is not only a franchise that continues to this day in video games, movies, and comic books, but I believe you noted this in your show, that Prince of Persia directly led to the creation of the Assassin's Creed franchise.
Right.
Right.
And there are so many other franchises that continue to this day. Leisure Suit Larry, Castle Wolfenstein, John Madden Football. These are all things that got their start on the Apple II.
Hmm. The Madden one surprises me a little, but that's neat to hear.
Yeah, EA launched the Madden franchise on the Apple II, and it was ported to many other systems, but that's where it got its start.
Well, that's amazing. We're so happy to have you on the show with us. You're probably the first of this kind that on our show. We've had a few guests, and they're gamers for sure, but they're more so kind of modern day gamers. And even their games that they selected for us to play were not the most retro of games. I mean, they did surpass our rule of you've got to be a game 15 years old or older. But yours far surpasses that, and your knowledge. We're so excited to have you on this show today. And so,
yeah, I love it. Lode Runner will actually be our oldest game that we've played yet.
Seriously? I had no idea. Wow.
I think so. Well, when was
NetHack?
No, NetHack was later 80s.
Yeah, that's true.
Did any of you grow up with the Apple II?
You know, we're all sort of one generation removed from that era.
Nolan maybe even two, honestly.
Yeah, Nolan probably two. we grew up gaming, but I think sort of PC era.
My first gaming console was the Nintendo, so...
Right. I've got lots of fun memories of sort of DOS games and you know, some of those older games, but not quite Apple II age.
Yeah. Because a lot of schools had Apple IIs. They were very popular with the education market, and a lot of people grew up playing Oregon Trail or Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Absolutely.
Yeah, see, I played Oregon Trail at school, but not on an Apple II. It was definitely a Windows port.
Yeah, it was ported to almost every platform imaginable, and it actually didn't even get its start on the Apple II. It was released for a different machine first, but the Apple II is where it got its popularity. Kind of like Tetris and Game Boy. You know, it existed before the Game Boy came out, but that's how it
sort of what defines
a phenomenon.
It.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've talked some about the Apple II, and that's great, but let's actually now get into our kind of robust discussion concerning the Apple II Classic Lode Runner.
Overview.
So, Ken, I want you to correct me at any point in time if I'm wrong, all right? So Lode Runner first came out on the PlayStation 4.
That's right.
No, all right. Lode Runner came out on the Apple II, as you might know already, in 1983. And since then, it has been ported and recreated on every system. Like, I'm not joking. From everything from Commodore
Literally.
64 to the Xbox 360, from the arcade to the mobile phone, that this game has been reproduced time and time again. And there's so much history to this game that we could probably dedicate an entire episode just to its story.
The
and
different
its creation.
Versions of the game.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that alone.
Pretty sure they created like a handheld console that just plays this game. You know,
amazing.
A real simple one even. Yeah.
Yeah, even a board game. Like, they've got everything about this game. And so to keep it short and sweet, a college student by the name of Douglas Smith developed a fun little game that he offered to Broderbund, and they declined. They didn't want the game. They just sent back a single sentence saying, you know, sorry, this is not going to go along with our catalog of games. And so... instead of letting that defeat him, Douglas worked on it for 2 more months before resubmitting the game. And he at that time, he resubmitted it to 4 different publishers. And quickly, he received offers from all 4 of them. They wanted the game. They wanted it immediately. So he ended up going with the initial company that declined on him. And so they asked him to create 150 levels. And so he did. So that's the game. That's the classic Lode Runner game. It's 150 levels. Levels with a very simplistic concept. You move a stick figure left and right, up and down. You collect gold, you avoid guards, and then after you've collected all the gold, you exit the level. Does that sound about right, Ken?
Yeah, exactly. There are, as you said, the piles of gold, and as you're running around collecting them, the guards can also pick them up, and sometimes you then need to trap them in holes that you dig to get them to drop the gold. As soon as you've collected all the gold on the level, a ladder appears, reaching to the top of the screen. You climb to the top there, and it advances you to the next stage with 1 extra life.
So you chose this game. We asked you in advance. We knew you were going to be coming on the show with us, and we said, hey, pick any game from retro history that you would like for us to play. And you contemplated, you had a few different options, but you ultimately went with Lode Runner. So what was it that caused you to pick this game for us to play this past week?
Well, I was really tempted by the game Conan, Hall of Volta for the Apple II, which was originally not supposed to be a Conan game, but they slapped the name on to get some brand recognition. But it only has like maybe 6 levels, and if you know how to beat it, you can do it in 10 to 20 minutes. And I know that New Game Plus is a show where you play an entire game for a week, and I didn't want you to master this game too quickly and get bored with it. Lode Runner, by comparison, has 150 levels, as well as being one of the very first home games to have a level editor where you can create your own. So I figured I could throw this game at you for a week, and even if you somehow got through all 150 levels, the replay value is nonetheless infinite, and you could just keep on playing it. So I figured I had this game in mind when I went onto the Apple II Enthusiasts group on Facebook, which has several thousands of members, and it's very active. And I asked the question, what Apple II game would hold a modern gamer's attention? And I got a ton of great suggestions. Lode Runner was one of them. And I was already sort of leaning in that direction. John Romero actually piped in with some suggestions of his own. But I kind of already knew the answer even before I asked, and I wanted to play a game that I was familiar with and which I had grown up playing. Lode Runner is one of those games. I played this game so much as a kid. My three older brothers and I all played it together, and the original Apple IIe only ran at 1 megahertz. Our father bought a accelerator card for the computer, which replaced the CPU and upgraded it to like a blazing 3 or 4 megahertz, and the game ran that much faster. So your hero was zipping across the screen, the guards were chasing you at light speed, and it made the game so much harder and so much more hilarious and fun. So there are just so many different ways to play this game, including the iOS port and the Android port. I know that you probably use emulation a lot on this show, but if you want to play a legit copy of the original, then they have made it available for Android and iOS with various input devices that you can use. So it's a game that is really easy to get a hold of through a variety of means, legitimate and otherwise, and it's something that has so much replay value that you can just keep going back to it and keep being challenged.
You mentioned there are 150 levels.
Yes.
I got to level 17 and I thought I was doing pretty good. I thought, you know, maybe 20 to 30, and then I find out there's 150 levels and I just get so depressed. Like, how? Have you beaten the game?
I don't think so, but there is a cheat that you may not have been aware of, or maybe not a cheat, but you would only really know about it if you had the instruction manual, which is that while the game is running in its attract mode, you press Control E on the keyboard, and that pops into the level editor, and it just prompts you with command, and if you hit P, that's the command for play, and asks you what level do you want to play, and you can type in any number 1 to 150, and it jumps right to that level.
Wow, that's convenient.
No idea.
Yeah, so I think I have beaten level 150, but I can't say I've beaten all 150 levels.
Yeah, getting there honestly, like in a row, would be a pretty tall order.
Right, I mean, the game is fairly generous with lives. I don't think it gives you more lives based on your score, but it does give you one life for every level you finish, and there are some levels that you can finish without dying, which is helpful to keep that supply handy. But 150 levels without like passwords or continues, that's challenging.
Yeah, you would be playing a lot of this game to get to the point where you could get there flawlessly.
Yeah, and I mean, the game moves at a relatively slow speed by today's standards. So if you one level, if even if you know what you're doing and you don't die, it can still take you several minutes to finish.
Sure.
And that's one of the things I love about this game is that the slow pace is appropriate for a game that is essentially a puzzle platformer, which was a genre that sort of disappeared for a while, and it really didn't seem to come back that much until Braid on the original Xbox 360. The only real arcade contemporary I can think of for Lode Runner might be like Burger Time, and that's most people wouldn't consider that a puzzle game per se.
The goal here definitely wasn't to just have quick reaction speed. You're needing to think about the layout of the level and where the gold's located and how the guards are going to move and even how to manipulate the AI to work to your advantage in some cases. And very much a thinking game.
Gameplay.
The levels are comprised of bricks, and there's bricks everywhere. And everywhere there's not a brick, there's a ladder. So the only thing that you can do as the main character is you can dig. You can dig on the left of you or you can dig on the right of you. And the guards that are chasing you, they will fall into the holes that you've dug and momentarily serve as your bridge, which is awesome. And you mentioned they collect gold as they pass over it, but they drop it when they fall. So there are times where you're going to have to make them fall so that you can then collect the gold that they've essentially stolen from you trying to steal it. So, but where the difficulty comes out, like for me significantly, is when gold is trapped under bricks and you have to kind of systematically clear row after row so that you don't end up getting stuck, because it's very easy in this game to get stuck. And when you're stuck, you're dead.
Yeah, because those bricks reappear, the ones that you dig. And so if you don't do it quick enough, then you're not getting out.
Crushed.
It took me way too long to figure out. It's level 2 that the first gold pile of gold is underneath bricks. It took me way too long to like understand the strategy to do that. I was like, I would dig a hole and then walk into it over and over, and I'd be like, how do you do this?
Yeah, it gets even more challenging in later levels because, as you mentioned, the guards serve as a bridge that you can walk across. So the head of the guards is the only part of them that you can touch without dying. And the inverse is not true. If you fall into a hole and the guards walk over you, you die. So you can use standing on their head to your advantage, not only when they're in a hole, but also when they're falling, because the Lode Runner character, he not only runs faster than the guards, he also falls faster than the guards.
Yeah, some good physics right there.
Exactly. So there are times where you need to manipulate the guards to make them fall, and then you need to fall right above them while they're still falling so that you have something to stand on and jump off to land on a certain ledge.
Considering the simplicity of this game, it really is amazing the amount of mechanical things that you need to learn strategy-wise about how to, you know, have guards collect gold for you if it's somewhere that you can't get to it, about the kind of bricks you need to remove to get to a brick that's buried without trapping yourself, about motion, and it is a very simple game, but that definitely uses its mechanics very creatively. I thought they did a great job with the level design in terms of making you learn and utilize those different things.
And the AI too, like around level 11 is kind of where it started to pick up for me, like difficulty wise. I spent a good 30 minutes on that level, which is just a series of ladders in the middle of the stage. And then there's like one on the edge of the stage. And so I just spent like 30 minutes trying to trick the AI to get out of my way so I could get to where I needed to go, and they just wouldn't do it. And it was actually, now that I'm saying it, it's actually really impressive that this game was able to do that, to create that level of difficulty with the AI.
And I think that level, if I'm remembering correctly, it doesn't have any bricks that you can dig at all.
Right. It's just the normal ones that you can't touch.
Right.
Like you can't do anything to.
Yeah, a lot of ladders, a lot of the hand-to-hand bars that you can suspend yourself from, but no digging. So no trapping, no strategy that you've grown accustomed to over the last 10 levels. It mixes things up like that.
Which I love. I love when games set a precedent of what is required in each stage, and then a few stages later use none of that and cause you to do something. It reminds me a lot of Chip's Challenge. Ken, have you ever
played
that before?
I was actually just thinking that.
I've heard that name. I don't think I've actually played it, though.
So that's a game that Kenny grew up with, and we actually we played and talked about on an episode a few months ago. And it's a puzzle-oriented, logic-based game. Lode Runner reminds me of Chip's Challenge because in Lode Runner, most stages require digging, though some do not. And so in Lode Runner, some stages you have to just complete a task to advance to the next level, or get to a certain location. You know, it might not be that the gold is hidden around the map, but it is that you either have to, you know, A, make a guard bring you the gold, or B, just find out how to climb up to a certain place, or even C, just avoid the guards entirely. And I love that and you get that flexibility when you have 150 stages, but I love that there's a precedent. You dig, and that's how you get that's how you accomplish your task. But then there are some stages where you don't use that at all. I love that.
What's really great is even on top of all that diversity, and they really did do a great job of creating levels that feel unique and that, you know, feel like a different challenge each time. But is the fact that even though this game is fairly early, and there's obviously a lot of technical limitations on what you're able to do, that they were able to create a level editor that was fully operational, where you could build a level per your design and it would function just like a normal level in the playthrough of the game. And I feel like that really is something that allows a game to develop a community and to grow even beyond its sort of initial playthrough. We talked about this some even in a much more recent game last week as we played through StarCraft, and the ability for people to kind of take ownership of a game when they can put their creativity into how those levels look.
And that level editor is actually one of the first examples I can think of crowdsourcing, which is that Doug Smith, when he was creating this game, invited all the neighborhood kids to come over and play it and make their own levels. and a lot of those levels ended up in the final version that he submitted to Broderbund.
Amazing.
Which is so awesome. Like, pre-internet, like, who do you have? Just yep. neighborhood kids.
Neighbors.
That's right. That's
I would
great.
Love to have been one of those kids that, you know, now, yeah. like, that would be the thing I could brag to people about, and most wouldn't care, but if I was like, you know the game Load Runner? Oh, you don't?
No,
well, I
sick,
created
yeah.
a level.
And, like, this was by far the highlight of this game for me was the level editor. Like, I don't know how it compares to the original, but I played a HTML5 version of the level editor, and I'm sure it's much easier now, but I don't know. Maybe on the Apple II, it was just as easy to make a level, but like, it's awesome that you can make your own puzzle and then play it. And this game, remember, came out in 83, so that's like crazy to me. And I had like the most fun just making stages and then playing them. Like, I'm fascinated with micro stages, like really compact and really small stages where you have to think quick and you have to go get the gold. And I would beat it, and then I would try and make it harder. I would add something else to it and then play it again and try and beat it. And that's so cool to me that you can do that with this game.
Yeah, Doug Smith was definitely ahead of his time when he created this feature. I mean, 1983 is just so early, and to have that kind of flexibility on a game that only had 140 kilobytes to one side of one floppy disk, I have to wonder how you jam that many levels and then a level editor on top of it onto a floppy disk. He really was working within his constraints there.
Super Mario Maker just came out like just recently, and that's what I was reminded of that game, and I was like, oh my goodness, like, this was so ahead of its time,
many decades removed from Super Mario Maker.
Yeah.
So I think a game like this is really based on logic. There's some trial and error, but eventually, I mean, even just a dozen stages in, and I think that it's going to come down to logic. And for some people, I think that this game is going to be far too difficult for their enjoyment level. Eventually, it will welcome you in and make you feel nice and make you feel like you're a part of the crew. But as soon as you get into like the serious levels, I think that it divides those that have that kind of logic mind and are patient people from the ones that don't think that way and would rather this fast-paced type thing. And so for me, who is not the most logical of persons, I got stuck early on. Like, I think it was like stage 9. It was a castle. It looked like a castle. And so yeah. the whole brick platform was in the air. You had to climb a ladder to get to it and go across a tightrope. And then...
Were you getting stuck in the middle platform?
Oh, yeah.
I think that was level 8.
Okay. Well, I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. And so I spent... like an embarrassing amount of time on it, and I could not figure it out. So I did the cheap thing and I looked up how to do it, and I followed that. But then after that one, I breezed through stage after stage until like stage 21 or so before I got stuck again. So it's that kind of experience in this game. Some stages might seem impossible for you, while others might seem simplistic. But as you get later and later in the game, I think it just piles on the difficulty and the necessity for logic. And some people, I just don't think that they'll have the chops to do it well.
Aged.
Ken, I'm curious to what you feel now that you played it recently, and since you're a Apple II enthusiast, you know, you're heavily involved in the community, which is a very old system. How do you feel about the age of this game?
Well, first let me ask, how did each of you play this game? Were you using an emulator? Am I the only one who has ever played it on an actual Apple II?
Out of us, I believe that's the case, yeah. I played HTML5.
Oh, there's a web-based version? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a web version.
Yeah, and that's what I played too. And it's a direct, you can choose the different game types. And if you choose Load Runner Classic, I believe that it's you know, as close as possible to what the Apple II was. In fact, you've got different controller or button configurations. And I just played on the Apple II configuration.
Gotcha. Because I was playing in the Internet Archive on at archive.org. They have an in-browser emulator that actually is the original Apple II version. So I just plugged in my PS4 controller, PlayStation 4, into my MacBook Pro via USB, and it worked great. I never thought I'd be playing Lode Runner on a PlayStation 4 joystick.
Crazy, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But each of the versions does have some slight differences. For example, if you were to play the iOS or Android version, when a guard picks up gold, he sparkles. So you can always tell which guard is carrying gold so that you don't have to try to trap them all and see which one drops the gold. So that makes it a little bit easier.
That's a nice feature, because that is frustrating. When you get to a level, you collect all the gold and there's a bunch of guards left. Mm-hmm. And you have no idea which one. You got to just farm them up.
Also on the original Apple II, if you start digging a hole and the guard reaches you before the hole is finished being dug, it doesn't count. Like, the hole just fills back in.
Right.
Whereas on the iOS and Android version, the guard actually will fall in.
That makes it easier as well, yeah. Because there are many times where they're right next to me and I just try to dig a hole quickly, but it didn't work. It filled back up and he got me.
Right. So these two things do make it a little bit easier, which I don't think is necessarily a good thing for people who played the original. There was a separate version of this game, Lode Runner Championship Edition, where they basically took they accepted reader submissions from the level editor and took the 50 hardest levels and released those as their own compilation of user-generated content, called it the Championship Edition. A couple of years ago at Kansas Fest, the annual Apple II convention, there was a Lode Runner Championship Edition championship. And these are all people who grew up playing this game, and we're still challenged to this day. Like, I sat down to play this game, and I don't think I got past the first level. It is a tough game.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you were to make those changes that the iOS and Android version have, maybe I could have gotten through the first level, but I'm not sure I'd want to. I would want to know that I was playing the game the way it was originally designed. And so, to talk about how it's aged, I think people who have never played this game before would probably want to play a version that has those enhancements, those gameplay changes that are a little bit more accommodating and understanding of what it is you're trying to do and how you want to go about it, like find out which guard has the gold or dig a hole before you die. If you really want the old school hard version, though, you have to go with some version or some emulation of the Apple II version. And as you were saying, Dustin, I think that might drive away some people who are looking for a faster experience, for example. If they expect this to be an action game and instead discover it's a platform puzzler, that might be an unpleasant surprise. Or people who want the game to move more quickly, whereas the Internet Archive version I was playing was running at 1 megahertz, the way the game is designed to be played. It wasn't running at 4 megahertz. So it can be a little bit slow moving, especially when there are a lot of guards on the screen. The game slows down a little bit as it animates everything. It depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a fast-paced game or a game that is a little forgiving, then I don't think Lode Runner is going to be it. But as for whether or not it's aged well, I mean, I think it has, because I still think the graphics look great, to be honest. It's very primary colors. It's very easy to see what's happening, where you have to go, and what you have to do, if not necessarily how. You do need to think about that. And I really like that the game mixes things up. It requires you to work on many different levels. You're not just moving, but you're thinking, and you have to sometimes manipulate the guards so that they can't reach you, just that you can have a breather, so you can look at the screen and figure out, WTF do I do next?
Yeah, I had a number of those moments where I just stopped on a ladder because I saw that all the guards did in response. And
right,
I was like,
exactly.
Okay, now let's process. So for me, the fact that the game has been ported and remade as many times as it does is a great indicator of its replayability. Games that have a core mechanic that's popular and that's good on its own merits tend to do that a lot more successfully, in my view, than games that don't. But even without thinking about those later games, sitting down and just picking up this very simple game. I was afraid it was going to feel a little boring. I was afraid it was going to have sort of that really retro kind of Pong problem of like, I've figured the game out, now it's just rote, you know? And it absolutely didn't have that. And so I thought though it is, you know, a little slow and a little older and you feel those things, I thought the, like, classic vibe of the puzzle made the game really enjoyable for me, even this many years later.
I had a problem with the game, and it was the silence that this game is full of. And it kind of makes you realize, and I know this isn't everyone's issue, but it made me realize that having music, like game music in the background or something besides, I mean, there were sound effects, obviously, for falling and digging holes and picking up gold and stuff, but there was no music. And so if you're just walking around, you just hear yourself breathing. And it kind of made me uneasy. It points out how comforting music can be in a game, like video game music can be for me. And I really felt the age in that sense. And I know it's probably a limitation of the Apple II or the game itself, but that was tough for me because I've never experienced that, just silence playing an old game.
Yeah, I think I remember Prince of Persia, that being an issue for me, because in the earliest versions, it did not have background music. It only had the, you know, three or four sound effects that they put into the game. And so, yeah, so I felt that in Lode Runner, because while the sound effects, in my opinion, are good, nothing is good after, you know, 4 hours of hearing it over and over and over again. Right. So
yeah, I'd almost rather it be quiet than be terribly repetitive.
Yeah, that's true too. But outside of music, like I think it's somewhat difficult for puzzle games to age poorly, in large part because puzzle games rarely focus on graphics or music as their driving factor.
That's a good point.
You know, they focus on gameplay, and Lode Runner had such quality, addicting gameplay that, in my opinion, I agree with Ken that it's just aged remarkably well in so many areas, and especially, as has already been mentioned, for those that that this game might be too foreign or too difficult just because of its age, well, okay, then pick it up on the Xbox 360 or on your Android device or on any other system, and maybe they've updated it. And and not to mention, I mean, other games in the Lode Runner series that has been produced since then. And so there's Lode Runner 2, even Lode Runner 3D for the Nintendo 64. I don't know about their quality whatsoever, but you've got Lode Runner, even the one that is from so long ago, that is definitely still playable today.
Yeah, if you're looking for a modern take on Lode Runner, I don't know if a 7-year-old game is still considered modern, but they released a Lode Runner for the Xbox 360 that was 220 new levels, all new graphics, sound effects, two-player mode, soundtrack, and I thought that was a lot of fun. It has a 76 Metascore, which is not bad, actually. 21 positive reviews, 7 mixed, and only 1 negative review.
There's also a few middle-of-the-road implementations. I don't even know which one I played, but on a later Apple, not the Apple II, but the big, bubbly, colorful one that we had when I was in middle school, we had a version of Lode Runner on it that was, you know, better graphics and still played very similar to the first. And I had hours put into this game in our homeroom class years ago. And so there's enough of a progression that someone can find the sweet spot if they want to play this game in terms of you know, how they want it to look and how they want to interact with it.
So once you master the original 150, you can move on to the next few games of 220 levels.
Goodness
plus.
Gracious.
Yes, you have to play all in order. That's right.
Right. And when you're done with those, then you can do a couple of Nolan's micro levels to see if you're actually really, really good.
Oh, yeah, because I got the levels. If you don't, you're not a true fan of the series.
You should assemble a Lode Runner New Game Plus Edition where you all create your own levels and put them on one disc.
I'm digging it.
That would
amazing
be
amazing idea, Ken. All right, guys, let's talk about New Game Plus status. Are we going to give it or not?
The final shell shock.
So every game that we play, we want to either give the game our New Game Plus seal of approval or not, which basically that's just us saying it is worth playing again. If you haven't played it, you should try it. If you like retro gaming, if you like gaming at all, we just think that it was good and we think that it should be played and experienced by more people than just us.
Yeah, good enough to dust off and do another playthrough of.
And I say we allow our esteemed guest to go first. So Ken, would you mind sharing whether or not you believe that Loadrunner deserves your New Game Plus status?
I will give my vote on that matter, but let me give you a couple of other people's votes as well as to the significance of Loadrunner. Here's a quote. One person wrote, "I consider it a real puzzle game. That was my favorite game for many, many years. It's such a good combination of dynamic stuff. The finger work, the planning, the puzzle solving. I can't imagine any other game with such inventive and unusual design." That quote comes from Alexey Pazdanov, the creator of Tetris.
Oh,
which is saying something. Yeah.
So this is back in the 80s when this game came out. This is the game that the creator of Tetris was playing.
Yeah, I wonder what Doug thought when he saw that review from the creator of Tetris. Wow.
But he was not a one-hit wonder. In fact, he went on to work on a game that you guys all reviewed in episode number 15, that being Chrono Trigger.
Really?
Oh my God.
I'm actually not surprised at all.
Yes.
Doug did that?
Yeah, he worked on three Square games. He contributed to the localization of Chrono Trigger. He was the executive producer of the North American edition of Secret of Mana, and he was also the executive producer of Secret of Evermore.
What? Well,
very cool.
All right.
That's
we
so
all
crazy.
Know who we want to be when we grow up.
Yeah, when you see how good this initial game is, it doesn't surprise me that he went on to continue doing big things. Again, putting that level editor in there, like so many just wise, really well thought out game design decisions.
This guy's a rock star.
In fact, the Video Game Hall of Fame, located at the International Center for the History of Electronic Games at the Strong Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. Wow, that's a mouthful. They just inducted their second year or second class of games. Every year they pick like 6 to 8 games that demonstrate the milestones in video game development. And Doug Smith's daughter was campaigning very heavily on Twitter to get Loadrunner nominated. Anybody could go to the website and submit their own nominations, and whichever got the most votes would be considered by a panel for final inclusion. Loadrunner didn't make it this year. Oregon Trail did, but there's always next year. I'm hoping Loadrunner will make it next year because, in my opinion, it is not just one of my favorite games from childhood. If you eliminate the nostalgia and look at its impact on game design and its longevity in the industry and the contributions of its creator to the industry, I would definitely say yes, this game gets a thumbs up from me.
For sure. Classic. Beautiful. With a capital C.
Nolan?
I'm also going to extend my vote for giving this New Game Plus. I think it's incredible. Okay, and especially after learning that this guy also worked on Chrono Trigger, which I adore that game.
Yeah, we're kind of fanboys. That game's
like,
great.
Like, what a legacy. He passed early, but he definitely left amazing work for people to enjoy even today. Like, it doesn't matter if you own Apple II or not. You can play the game, and you need to play the game. I see influence I see how it's influenced games today. Like, I mean, Super Mario Maker I've mentioned. Like, you can create your level. Think about how old this game is. I see Spelunky, like definitely they had to have, you know, been inspired by Loadrunner, and so it has a huge significance in retro gaming, and I think people should play it.
I would say that I definitely give it my New Game Plus seal of approval. I give it New Game Plus status. It requires a certain level of skill and logic and timing, and you truly do learn as you advance in levels. It would have been nice, sure, to have music, but that's just retro gaming for you. So I think everyone should try it. If you're a retro fan or a puzzle fan and haven't played Lode Runner, you're doing something wrong. Also, and I mean, I could have just said this for my sake, but there's an author by the name of Orson Scott Card, and if you don't know who he is, then uninstall this podcast. But he wrote in Compute Magazine a while back, and he said that Lode Runner's editor was the first game that let him and his family express their creativity through gaming. And so that's high appraisal from a guy that I highly appraise. And so I definitely give this game my new game plus status.
I think you guys have summed it up well. This game is old. It does feel old, but it transcends that and offers enough both as a kind of classic in retro gaming and on its own merits that it's definitely one worth checking out and putting a little bit of time into.
So this game does receive our New Game Plus seal of approval.
Across Woo-hoo. The board. Yeah, yeah.
Bill emailed us at ngppodcast@gmail.com.
Bill.
There. Thank you. And he said, "Hey guys, I wanted to get in on the Lode Runner discussion. I played this on the Apple IIe alongside Kids on Keys and Mario Bros. My favorite part was the level creator. Little Billy, that's himself, spent lots of time creating levels, even though he really had no clue what he was doing. I admit that I didn't play the game this week, so I may be affected by the fog of nostalgia, but I remember this game as being super fun. However, I don't think it really stands the test of time. Graphics aren't always important, but with this game, I think it accentuates its age. The sound effects are great, but limited. I don't think that the game would do well if it were ported to a current gen concept, but back in the 80s it was the bomb. I look forward to the next game."
Sweet. Thanks, Bill. Always good to hear your thoughts.
Eric sent us a message on Facebook, and he said, "The first time I saw this game was a few months ago when taking my customized NES to a friend's house to play retro games with his kids. Little did I know, but he had this game in his Nintendo already. So like any proud papa, he wanted to show me his game and his skills. I, on the other hand, was awful at this game. I will give it the benefit of the doubt that the NES just didn't do the Apple II version any favors. The box art looked cool enough, but was saddened that the characters looked more like a little girl with blueberry hair. Not only that, but trapping myself in a hole was not as much fun as I always imagined it would be. On a good note, the game makes me want to play Dig Dug since the bad guys remind me of him. Perhaps the edit mode could have been fun, but I got bored all too quick, so I didn't try it. I wish I could have tried the Apple II version, but this version is closer to a load of crap."
Oh, come on.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, I don't know.
What do you think? Do you think?
No, people are absolutely allowed opinions, and like it's one
are
of
they?
Those games. They are, although not on the internet. At least if okay, I'm on the other side of the argument, because I'm right.
Keep going.
That's how it works. But like ultimately, if you don't like a game, you don't like a game, and that's fair. And that's one of the neat things about games and people is that they're all different. So,
well, NNAC did enjoy the game, and he or she said, "This game brought back many memories. I had a 2+ 16K expansion card, lowercase chip, VidX enhanced video card, copy card, 2 floppies, and a green screen."
Yeah, Ken knows exactly what you just said.
Right, because we definitely don't. "My favorites were Boulder Dash and Captain Goodnight and Wizardry. I remember how excited I was when I found a character editor for that game. So back to Lode Runner. It is one of, if not the, most remade games in the video game industry. It holds up today, and it's effing difficult late game."
That's true.
I'd also say it's effing difficult early game and mid game.
Yeah. How late are we talking here? Because, again, I didn't get to 20.
If it's after 9 o'clock and you're playing the game, you might think it's difficult.
Is that a joke?
But you know I gotta stick at least one really bad one in every episode. Deal with it.
All right, Ken, at the end of each of our episodes, we randomly select a new game out of our Retro Master list, which is available on all of our social media sites. You can find the link there, viewers. But we have got an ever-growing list. Weekly, we have new suggestions of games to add to that list. Ken, do you have a suggestion of a game that might not be on our list that we could add, that we could play sometime in the future, especially if it's like an Apple II or one of these early games?
Well, if you're looking for an Apple II game that you probably haven't played, I would suggest Castle Wolfenstein.
Okay.
That's on our list, I think, right?
I think we have a later version on the list already, but it might be fun to put the Apple II version on there as well.
I haven't looked at your list, so it may already be on there. I know that Wolfenstein 3D is what popularized the first-person shooter genre, but it was based on a top-down stealth game for the Apple II.
Awesome. Sounds great. And to all our viewers, know if you've got an old game you want us to play, or even a somewhat old game, our definition of retro is pretty varied, because we just like to see where games have been, so send us in suggestions. We'd be glad to get around to it eventually.
And now it's time for us to randomly select the next game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days is... Goal! Exclamation point.
What?
It's goal!
I feel like you said that wrong.
You're not supposed to say exclamation point?
No, I feel like you've got to say, goal!
There's not that many O's, but it's goal! Exclamation point. Nintendo Entertainment System game from 1988.
Sports game, I'm guessing?
Yep, released in Japan as Burn Pro Soccer.
Burn with exclamation point.
Two exclamation points.
Oh, Burn!
That's so much louder than goal.
Yeah, it's so much more excited. That's awesome.
Twice as much excitement.
That's the new old game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days, so definitely find a copy and play with us. Ken, where can our viewers find you? I know you mentioned a few things that you're a part of at the start of this podcast, but would you remind them one more time?
Sure. I can be most easily found on Twitter at handle GameBits. That's GameBits. I also have a YouTube channel with the same name where I do unboxings and Let's Plays of primarily indie games. And then if you are interested in the Apple II, you can find the magazine Juiced.gs at its website, which is Juiced.gs. And the annual Apple II convention I go to, which I'm not affiliated with other than being an enthusiastic attendee for 19 years in a row, is kansasfest.org.
Very awesome.
Wonderful. Well, I think I speak for all of us. It has been a joy having you on this episode. Your knowledge and handling of these retro systems and games is far superior to any of ours, and we're just in awe of the knowledge that you have. So thank you for joining us
today.
Yeah,
appreciative of your time. Thanks for coming out.
Well, thank you for having me, but don't confuse knowledge with age. I'm just wicked old is all.
Kenny is too. It's okay.
Well, either way, we had a lot of fun, and I wish we could have you on more often because you're really good at this.
Well, I am greatly relieved that I was able to suggest a game that you actually liked. I'm glad I didn't have to make you suffer for me.
Hey, we've had to suffer before, and we'll do it again because there's some fun in suffering, especially for our viewers.
It's true.
Wonderful.
Speaking of viewers, guys, thank you for your support. Thank you for listening today, tonight. We cherish your feedback. Feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you're listening to us on. Connect with us throughout the week on our social media sites, Twitter or Facebook, NGP Podcast. You can email us, ngppodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to hanging out with you guys next week as we talk about the game Goal. Until then, I'm Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And I'm Ken.
And this has been New Game Plus.